Hello, welcome to the Podmatic Podcast. I'm Brian.
Hi, I'm Crystal. We're librarians at Nashville Public Library's main branch.
This podcast is where you can find reviews and recommendations of the best books, movies, and music available for checkout at the Nashville Public Library, and find out about library programs like concerts, author talks, and book signings.
And don't forget movies.
I can't believe you listened to that.
This is where we talk about music that we like. Electronic music duo Sean Booth and Rob Brown have been recording under the moniker Autechre for 15 years, and their work still continues to define forward-thinking techno music. Noted for its abstraction, their music is firmly rooted in electro and hip-hop. Most of their tracks consist of propulsive drum machine gymnastics, and their new full-length, Quarterstis, just came out on Warp Records. Here's a taste. Autechre have reinvented their sounds in recent years, abandoning laptop computers in favor of drum machines and synthesizers recorded straight to tape with minimal post-production editing. Quarterstis consists of many short tracks, representing what would have constituted the core ideas of longer compositions found on their earlier albums. By keeping things brief, they capture the energy of live improvisation, not giving the beats a chance to meander. Quarterstis finds Autechre rediscovering themselves, as if they needed to anyway. So, Crystal, what's on your turntable?
Well, that was pretty far out. Autechre, I gotta check it out. But lately, I've been listening to a singer-songwriter. If you like Nora Jones or Madeline Peru, she's right up your alley. Her name is Melody Gardot, and she played piano in bars as a teenager, but at age 19, she decided to pursue a degree in fashion at a college in Philly. While she was riding her bicycle, she was hit by a Jeep making an illegal turn. So for the next several months, she was in the hospital recovering from her injuries. She now uses a cane to walk and has to wear shaded glasses due to photosensitivity. Well, since Melody had a musical background, her doctor suggested she try music therapy as a means for recovery. Specifically, he believed it would help her with cognitive problems. So while she was still unable to walk, Melody began writing and recording songs on a portable multi-track recorder right at her bedside. She was quoted as saying, "I started recording the songs as a way to remember what I'd done. I had really bad short-term memory problems. At the end of the day, I couldn't remember the beginning." So the track we're about to listen to is called Worrisome Heart, and this is off of Melody's first full-length record. So let's give it a listen.
I need a hand with my worrisome heart. I would be lucky to find me a man who could love me the way that I am with this here worrisome heart.
That song reeks of sizzling summer nights, does it not? I think I hear a little Nina Simone in her voice. The rest of the album includes touches of jazz, blues, and folk, being all of those styles and yet none of them. You should definitely check it out.
That did reek of the summer. If you want something maybe that reminds you of winter, you should check out Daniel Lanois' Belladonna. Better known for being a high-profile rock and country producer, Lanois' solo work isn't afraid to venture into more ethereal realms. Belladonna is a series of lush pedal steel guitar instrumentals, the sonic equivalent of watching flowers bloom. Bordering on avant improv, sometimes the melodies slip apart. Other times, with the accompaniment of light keyboard and drums, it makes you feel like you're in the perfect bar a little too early in the afternoon. Don't let those drums fool you. This is a very ambient record with a lot of warm static and layers of reverb. I've always loved pedal steel guitar, and to hear it utilized this way is very refreshing. You know you're not in Kansas anymore with the opener. Belladonna was released on Anti Records, which started as a punk label, but has now released records by Nick Cave, Nico Case, Blackalicious, and Tom Waits. They've really branched out, and you can check out all those records of those artists I mentioned here at the library. They've evolved into a label to watch. Crystal, didn't you meet Daniel Lanois once?
No.
Okay, up next, Julie and Amanda have some book recommendations.
I can't believe you read that.
Believe it. I'm Julie.
And I'm Amanda. And we're going to talk about some great books that you can check out right here in the Popular Materials Department. Julie's up first.
Well, I'm a huge fan of audiobooks. And I just recently listened to Neverwhere by Neil Gaiman. It's an urban fantasy set in London with an office worker named Richard as unlikely hero. And he's transported into a parallel world underneath the city called London Below. It all starts when he sees a badly injured girl on the sidewalk as he and his fiancée are walking to a restaurant. Richard makes the crucial decision to help the girl in spite of his fiancée's objections, and it turns out to be a life-altering choice. He is soon deeply mired in the affairs of the dangerous but intriguing London Below, which is where the girl, whose name is Dor, is from. Why she has that unusual name becomes clear later. Then, when Richard tries to return to his old life, he finds that he's become invisible to everyone and no longer has an apartment, a job, or a fiancé. London Below is populated by folks who have slipped through the cracks of London above, and the subway and the sewer systems are featured quite a bit in the story. Two terrifically evil assassins, Mr. Krupp and Mr. Vandermeer, have recently killed Dor's family and are now stalking her. Richard joins her in the quest to learn why and to avenge their deaths. And there are other outlandish characters like Old Bailey, who trades in crows and information, the androgynous Angel Islington, the enigmatic Marquis de Carabas, and the seductive Velvets, who can suck out your life with a kiss, and plenty of others. Neverwhere was actually written directly for the screen, and the pacing is fast, with plenty of harrowing moments. Neil Gaiman, the author, does a wonderful job of reading, vividly bringing this fantasy world to life. I really enjoyed it, and I hope I've convinced you to read or listen to Neverwhere, but if you can't get it fast enough, try any of Gaiman's other excellent works, such as American Gods or Anansi Boys. Okay, Amanda, what's up your sleeve?
Okay, so when most people set out to write a book review, they're usually only writing about one book, right? But that can get old after a while. So in order to mix things up, I have taken it upon myself to go above and beyond the call of duty to bring you a series review. That's right, I said series, not one book, but six. So today only, for a limited time, my very first NPL Popmatic podcast series review is going to discuss The Black Dagger Brotherhood by J.R. Ward. Ms. Ward's books are firmly entrenched in the no man's land between paranormal romance and urban fantasy. Okay, 30-second genre timeout. For those of you who are uninitiated and have no idea what I'm talking about, paranormal romance, or PNR as we like to call it in the biz, is a genre of books whose main characters are not human, but rather vampires, werewolves, or wizards. Oh my. The plot usually revolves around some kind of romantic relationship. Urban fantasy, like what Julie was talking about, puts supernatural characters and events into the modern world. Relationships may still be present, but they're not always the focus. Got it? Okay, back to our regularly scheduled podcast. The Black Dagger Brotherhood features a group of abnormally large and sexy vampires who are using modern-day weapons and technology to try and save their race from evil bad guys, which sounds like urban fantasy, doesn't it? Each book focuses on one particular vampire and his attempts at finding a mate. See the PNR angle? Some of these guys are smooth operators, but a few of them are stuck in their past and have a difficult time adapting to life in the, finger quotes, real world. All of the guys are lovable in their own ways, but I'm just going to go ahead right now and call that Z is mine. Now, he's a little rowdy, but I really can't tell you more without offending the ever-present spoiler gods. Just trust me, he's sexy. However, read the series yourself, pick your own favorite vampire brother. Ward's books would make a perfect read for anyone looking for a sexy, vampiric good time. They're kind of long, but that just means more fun, and for me at least, they really flew by. Now, if you like Laurel K. Hamilton's Anita Blake, Sherilyn Kenyon's Dark Hunters, or Christine Feehan's Carpathians, then you really need to check out The Black Dagger Brotherhood. Now, disclaimer alert. These books are muy caliente, so if you are underage or you don't like a lot of violence or sex in your fiction, then this series is probably not for you. Okay, here's the point in the podcast where I rattle off the names of the books in order so you know where to start. So go ahead, find a pen, I'll wait. Go ahead. You wouldn't necessarily have to read them in order. I did, but it's really up to you. Find a pen yet? Okay, good. Here we go. The books in the Black Dagger Brotherhood are Dark Lover, Lover Eternal, Lover Awakened, the Book of Z, Lover Revealed, Lover Unbound, and Lover Enshrined. So, here's my challenge to you. Go to your local library, now that you have the list, and check out, or at least put on hold, one of these books, read it, and then tell me you can stop with just one. They're like potato chips. Totally addictive. Did I mention that Z is mine? Okay, just checking.
I can't believe you watched that.
This is Clint here for the I Can't Believe You Watched That segment of the Popmatic podcast. We are pleased to be featuring today an interview with John Hancock, the director of the horror cult classic Let's Scare Jessica to Death, which will be the first film in the Thursday Night of Terror Horror Film Festival that will be going on throughout the month of October on, you guessed it, Thursdays at 5:30 p.m. in the auditorium at the library on the big screen. So we do hope to see you out there. A few weeks ago, Mr. Hancock was nice enough to give us a phone interview, so we have a few snippets of that here for you guys to listen to. So here we go. Mr. Hancock, is it true that Jessica was going to be a satire and the original title was It Drinks Hippie Blood?
I don't remember the original title. That could have been. Yeah, the script that I was given was like a parody of a horror picture. And I didn't find it very funny. And so I said, well, why don't we just really try to make a scary movie? So I rewrote it pretty much entirely. And got into it as I was writing it. I scared myself there in the middle of the night at my typewriter. And the parts that scared me turned out to scare audiences, which I found gratifying.
What were the origins of the film?
I introduced a lot of personal material. I grew up on an apple farm, so I put an apple farm in it. My father played the double bass and carried his bass around in this kind of coffin-like case, so I put that in. I spent a lot of time watching my father spray these pesticides, so I worked that in. I don't know. It was it became strangely personal, the picture, you know? My college roommate said, well, if you think that redheaded lady isn't your mother, you're crazy, which had never occurred to me.
Were there any other influences that you had?
I looked at a lot of Hitchcock pictures while I was preparing to direct it. there was a picture that Robert Wise directed with Julie Harris called The Haunting that had a heroine that was recently released from a mental institution, and I was attracted by that and used that.
Was this a very small production with a small crew?
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was a union picture. We shot it in East Haddam, Connecticut, Old Saybrook, Essex, Connecticut. We shot quite a bit in the Dickinson Witch Hazel, in their mansion, their old mansion. We took over and kind of used that as a studio to shoot a lot of the interiors. I think it was $200,000 was the budget, $250,000, something like that. I think we shot 28 days, something like that.
Could you tell us a little bit about the cast?
Well, the two men I had worked with in the theater or seen in the theater. The husband, I ran two regional theaters. I ran the San Francisco Actors Workshop and the Pittsburgh Playhouse, and also a repertory company in New York. And the husband had been part of all those companies. Kevin, their friend, I had done a play with in New York and seen in several very successful New York productions. Zora Lampert, I had dated briefly, and I had seen her in several plays in New York that I liked a lot. Mary Claire, who played the girl in the house, had read for me for a Broadway play that I was doing.
One of the more effective things about Jessica is the score. Could you talk with us about how the composer came up with it?
It was written by Orville Stober, who I had done one or two plays with in New York and have since worked with a number of times. We used a Moog. You know, it was one of an early synthesizer computer piano that was very effective. I worked very closely on the music with the composer. I mean, I was a musician and think a lot about that and enjoy that. It's almost my favorite part of doing a movie is putting music to it.
The poster for Jessica is quite a striking image. Whose idea was that?
That was entirely Paramount. They really did their nut there. I mean, my thought was to call it Jessica, right? They very smartly decided to call it Let's Scare Jessica to Death, and they came up with that poster that I think is very striking.
How do you feel about the cult following that the film has picked up over these years?
I'm very happy. I'm very pleased. You know, nice to have people enjoy it.
Thanks for listening, and remember to tip your librarians. Until next time, we leave you with the following quote.
Groucho Marx said, "I find television very educational. The minute somebody turns it on, I go to the library and read a good book."
You've been listening to Nashville Public Library's Pop-Matic Podcast. For more information, please visit library.nashville.org.
That's on the interweb.